Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Well, top of the morning to you, or afternoon, if you're on the East Coast. George W. Bush coming out and saying, well, yeah, you know, we think that wouldn't it be nice if China actually did things like maybe give people trials? They shouldn't do, you know, what we do in Guantanamo, kangaroo courts. They should do real trials. And wouldn't it be nice if China didn't, you know, just throw people in jail without charges? Not the way that we do at Guantanamo, but, the way it should be done. And we have a classic case here of the pot calling the kettle black. Meanwhile, the protesters are being cleared out of the way in China. On the same day that China condemned President Bush's speech on its human rights policies, the country tried to hide an undercurrent of protest ready to burst into the limelight. The Washington Post reporting, China's intense efforts to block any protest that would mar the Olympic Games were challenged Wednesday by foreign activists equally bent on diverting attention to issues as varied as Tibetan independence, the crisis in Darfur, and religious freedom. Keep in mind, this is a country where if you're the member of the wrong religion, it could mean that you end up in prison, having your liver or kidneys sold after you've been executed. The interesting thing about this, and I broadly speaking, I mean, even beyond this, Bush coming out and, you know, this the irony of, I would say probably the in terms of human rights, one of the three worst presidents in the United States. And I would put the Democrat Woodrow Wilson, you know, throwing Eugene Debs in prison for speaking out against World War One, and John Adams with the Alien and Sedition Acts. I mean, both of them passed Alien and Sedition Acts, and now George W. Bush, saying China be better. But, you know, there's a real point here. And it's a point about what's going on with China and also what's going on with the United States. And that is the issue of fascism. I mean, let's just call it that. And I'm not talking about Nazism. I'm talking about fascism, the corporate state. Michael Ledeen, the right-winger, Michael Ledeen, he's been on this show. Michael Ledeen, back in 2002, wrote a piece for the Wall Street Journal, February 22nd, 2002, in which he nailed it. Here is one of the neocons nailing it, and it just needs to be said. It needs to be said clearly, and he said it very clearly. He said, China is not, as is invariably said, in transition from communism to a freer and more democratic state. It is instead something we have never seen before, a maturing fascist regime. Ledeen goes on to point out, this is neither socialism nor capitalism. It is the infamous third way of the corporate state, first institutionalized in the 1920s by the founder of fascism, Benito Mussolini, then copied by other fascists in Europe. Like the earlier fascist regimes, China ruthlessly maintains a single-party dictatorship. And it goes on to point out, you know, we never knew what would have happened had a fascist state survived in Europe because the fascists were defeated. Mussolini, Hitler, they were defeated. But he says, imagine 50 years, Italy, 50 years after the fascist revolution, if Mussolini hadn't been defeated. You know, he's long dead, but the corporate state is intact. The party is firmly in control. The nation's governed by professional politicians and a corrupt elite. That, says Ledeen, is China today. He also points out that classical fascism depends on war. Doesn't depend on it, but very often, you know, classically, it was the product of war. And war is very profitable, so fascist states tend to be very warlike. And China is building their military at a rate that is truly, truly startling. A piece in today's Wall Street Journal, an op-ed piece. Don't forget about China's dissidents. Western newspapers generally do not identify Hu Hintao as the general secretary of the Chinese Communist Party, even though it's his post. And basically this op-ed by Ellen Bork talks about how, you know, let's not forget what these people, what the Chinese are really all about. And who's helping them? They point out, she points out American companies like Google, which tailors its search engine to Chinese demands, and Yahoo, which cooperated in the investigation of journalist Shi Tao, also performed the censorship function. It doesn't point out that the owner of the Wall Street Journal, Rupert Murdoch, also owns Star TV. I believe it's called Star TV. Maybe it's Sky TV. Anyhow, the network, the cable, the satellite system in China, the satellite TV system in China, which is heavily censored. She goes on to point out Falun Gong and the Chinese Democratic Party, whose members experienced the most brutal treatment a Communist Party system has to dole out, including rape, beating, shackling, and electric shock. And even lawyers who try to defend these folks get nailed. Now, here's what's really interesting. It's not just... It is moving. It's not just that China has become essentially the manufacturing floor for the United States. I mean, first of all, let's just look at some of this stuff. The auto industry, Volkswagen, General Motors, all these companies, you know, many of these companies, Ford, right across the board, they're starting to make, if not entire cars, certainly parts, from engine blocks to small parts in China. And the Chinese government is saying, if you're going to do that, you have to allow us to clone or steal or borrow or buy your technology. And if you won't, we'll do it anyway. So there's this huge technology transfer, which is helping China invest, you know, big time in R&D. 5 of the 10 most polluted cities in the world now are in China. China, in the last 30 years, has lost half of its wetlands. This development has been an ecological disaster. Air pollution, water pollution, and other ways that the environment is destroyed are causing the deaths of 400,000 Chinese a year. And that's probably an underestimate. Laborers in the export sector, that's the stuff that comes to the United States, typically work 80-hour weeks in factories with virtually no health or safety standards. According to one Chinese government study, 72% of the country's nearly 100 million migrant workers, people who've gone from the farms to the cities to work in factories that are owned by transnational corporations, by and large, in conjunction with the fascist Chinese government, are owed unpaid wages. 72% of them. They come, they work, and they don't even get paid. They have no recourse. Why? Because unions are illegal. One expression of this, one indication of how bad it's getting, how this apparent prosperity is actually producing an explosion of poverty, is that there are now an estimated 20 million sex workers in China, mostly in the big cities, and that the suicide rate in China among young women is exploding, absolutely exploding. Meanwhile, China holds $1.8 trillion in foreign exchange reserves. The U.S. imports more goods from China than from any other country. China has now surpassed Japan as the world's largest holder of foreign exchange reserves. So they've got us. They've got us by the neck. They account for 40% of the world market growth for fuels and minerals. And I want to get into that right after the break and play for you a clip of my conversation with Salva Kiir, the vice president of Sudan, the president of Southern Sudan, when we were there in March and visiting the Darfur region of Southern Sudan, and what he had to say about China. China uses, by the way, and they don't do it particularly efficiently, for the same amount of production, China uses 7 times as much energy as Japan does. And ever since the mid-90s, they have been stepping up their activities in Africa. They're now the third largest trading partner with Africa. It is growing with regimes like the Democratic Republic of Congo, not so democratic, and Zimbabwe, not so democratic. China now the second largest economy. This is because it works. It doesn't require democracy. It doesn't require human rights. It doesn't require freedom of speech. All it requires is laissez-faire capitalism and a fascist state. They call it communism, but it's not communism anymore. It is now fascism. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. This whole thing, Salva Kiir is the president of Southern Sudan, the vice president of Sudan. And, I asked him about some of these problems that he's having with China.
To what extent?
This was, by the way, just a few months ago when, along with Ellen Ratner and a couple of other talk show hosts, Rusty Humphries, Jack Rice, I was on the Darfur border in southern Sudan. And just before that, a day or two before we were up on the border, we were down in south in Juba, which is the largest city in southern Sudan, the only city that has paved roads. There's 10 miles of paved roads in Juba, or 10 kilometers. And that's where we met for about 2 hours with the president of southern Sudan, Salva Kiir, the revolutionary fighter for 20 years who fought for the independence of southern Sudan.
To what extent are other states, China, the United States, European states, other African states, do they play a role in these problems that you're having, from the problem of self-determination and defining oil revenues and whatnot in the South, all the way up to the problem of what's going on in Darfur?
Well, I may not answer really your question correctly, because China is, of course, the one that has been working in the oil field, and it was the one that armed Bashir to fight us. And they were being told by the...
You hear that? China is the one that was working in the oil fields. China was the one that armed Bashir to fight us.
And they were being told by the Bashir's government that oil was in the north and that we in the south were not fighting for anything. We fought them because we are people who cannot reason. We just fight for the sake of fighting.
And Bashir, the dictator of Sudan, the guy who lives up in Khartoum, told the Chinese, well, those guys down in the south, Salva Kiir and all these rebels, they're just doing it because they're crazy people. They got no reason. I mean, they got no logic. They got nothing. They just like to fight. That's what's going on. And no, sorry, not the case. And in fact, the Chinese are flying gunships down in southern Sudan, and are supplying them, certainly.
It's in the agreement by itself.
Yeah, I don't want to get into a whole long... this was actually a very long interview with him. But here's the point. What China is proving, and I think this is the most important point of all of this, there's two things here. Number one, China is proving that fascism works, that it is possible to have a corporate-controlled, corrupt, essentially a corrupt elite controlling a state, have the patina of something that looks like democracy, but have it actually be controlled by a fascist state, and the merger of corporate and state interests be so complete that you even have the President of the United States showing up for the opening games. You have countries all over the world, seemingly democratic countries, kowtowing to it. And this is reversing the movement of democracy around the world, not forwarding it. In the meantime, this is where it gets really weird. You know, after 58,000 Americans died in Vietnam to supposedly bring freedom to the Vietnamese, Vietnam, like China, calls themselves a communist state, but has become a fascist state. And in China and in Vietnam, the wages, while China's wages are rising about 10% a year, it's now up to almost a dollar an hour in China that production workers make. In Vietnam, it's about a third of that. So as Keith Bradshaw in the New York Times wrote last month, Canon, for example, the company that makes printers and copiers, Hannes Brands, for example, the North Carolina underwear empire that used to make clothing in the United States until we did away with tariffs. These companies had been manufacturing in China. They're now moving to Hanoi. Foreign direct investment in Vietnam increased 136% between 2006 and 2007, while it increased just 14% in China. Why? Vietnamese factory workers make about a quarter of what their Chinese counterparts earn. Why Vietnam and why, and not, for example, Thailand? Well, because Thailand is more or less a democracy, and Thai workers tend to make more. And Thailand has a bit of a middle class, and it can be a little unstable, you know. Vietnam's edge, it seems. This, by the way, from an article by Ed Enchko over at opednews.com. Vietnam's edge, it seems, is political. Communism means more stability. This is actually quoting from Meyerson, a piece that was in the Washington Post. Vietnam, like China, outlaws independent unions. There's no free speech. There's no free elections. No radical shifts in government economic policies to be sprung upon unsuspecting American businessmen. So what do you have? You have fascism. And fascism works very, very well with absolute unrestrained capitalism. What we are seeing is the rise of transnational capitalism that is overwhelming nation states. And the only nation states that seem to be doing really well with it are those that are fascist, which means that the United States, if, you know, arguably, some would argue that the United States must become fascist if it's going to compete here. I don't think so, but that's the argument.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. Call us at 866-303-2270.
They still think I'm a star. Hear neighbors trust their neighbors. That's why I tap their phones. It keeps their freedom ringing. And I feel less alone. Even though I love them, that's just where I'm at. Besides, the rumor has it that one's a Democrat. Let's go to Mars.
Yeah, you tell them, George. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman Program brought to you in part by the Teamsters, fighting to pass the Employee Free Choice Act. You can find out more at teamsters.org. When we met with Salva Kiir, the president of Southern Sudan, and talked to him about the atrocities that were happening in Darfur and in Southern Sudan, he talked about how Bashir, the government from Northern Sudan, with the help of the Chinese who were drilling for oil and with gunships sold helicopter gunships sold to them by the Chinese were committing atrocities in the region. Here's Salva Kiir's answer to my question.
They have committed so many atrocities on our people in the oil field. They have displaced people and they have killed many people.
China.
The Chinese, yes. And, of course, by using the government, and they brought in so many helicopter gunships that were being used against the civil population. They have now seen the truth.
And they have now sealed the truth. And here you have the president of a country saying the Chinese are committing atrocities. They're flying helicopter gunships, and it doesn't even make the news. The proof that this is, and proof is the wrong word. More evidence here. You just see how this works of the merger of corporate and fascist state. China is spending about $40 billion on the Olympics. Now, keep in mind, Athens spent $9.5 billion. It busted their economy for a generation. China's spending $40 billion, but 63 corporate sponsors are spending $18 billion. NBC, over $1 billion. General Electric, which owns NBC, separate from NBC's $1 billion, is also tossing in an enormous amount of money. GE, the big defense contractor. They have a security force of 100,000, more than 100,000 soldiers. If you want to protest in one of the free speech zones, unlike the free speech zones that we've set up, which I think are an abomination, first you must go to the local police department and get the topic that you want to speak about cleared by the government. So you go into the police department, you say, I want to talk about religious freedom in China, and they say, oh, you do you? Off to jail with you. Many of these people go into the police stations and never come out. To get their permit for the free speech zone? No, sorry. Not only do you not get a permit, but now that we know what you're all about, you're toast, Charlie. They displaced 1.5 million people to build the Olympic complex. And when some protesters, there were particularly some women who were protesting to put a human face on this, they are now in prison. Joey Cheek of Team Darfur was just denied a visa into China. And Team Darfur is a moderate group. This is not, they're not saying, you know, Chinese get out or what. They've never called for a boycott of China. They, you know, Joey Cheek is one of these idealists. He actually thinks that holding the Olympics in China will bring world peace. But I think China's kind of blowing it by being so heavy-handed. Back in 2001, you'll recall, they promised open Olympics. Ain't quite working out that way. Nassar in Granada Hills, California. Hey, Nassar, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I appreciate your views, but I want to oppose you. I'm from Pakistan. Let me tell you, our first steel mill, which is the backbone of the economy, we got it from China 35 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Second, the heavy tool factory that we got from China, they're building trucks, machinery, tractors for industries, for farming, we got it from China under the friendship. No,
but China is becoming an imperial power. They're reaching all over the world. They're replacing the United States as an imperial power. I think it's wrong for either one to be an imperial power.
Okay, well, let's go back to 1949 when China gained its independence. I have some figures to share with you. 87% roads were unpaved, and I'm talking about China. 92% people had no medical benefits. 93% had no electricity. 85% people were uneducated. Today, in these 55, 60 years, all these figures are reversed. Now, you're talking about human
dignity. Well, hang on just a second, Nassar. If you're talking about uneducated, are you talking about after Mao killed people who had an education as part of the Cultural Revolution?
My point is, I would look at it in a broad sense. And that
are you suggesting that China is a democracy and that it's not a fascist state?
Well, let me finish and you will get the idea of what I'm talking about. Are you talking about the democracy that we have in the United States? Certainly, I would not wish that democracy for China. What I'm saying is it has brought it 95%, 98% of its population the human dignity level by providing them the basic necessities, basic needs. That is my main point. Give it another 50, 60 years, Well, right now, China has no imperialistic plan.
We are seeing, I respectfully disagree, and I would say the steel factory in your home country of Pakistan is one example. And beyond that, what this is the great mythology, that if we enable a fascist state, what used to be a communist dictatorship and is now a fascist dictatorship, although they haven't changed the word, if we continue to assist them to develop, or if we continue to use them as our factory floor, as our manufacturing floor, they are not going to become more democratic. They're going to become more fascistic, and that's what's happening right now. They're clamping down on their people. What we are seeing is that capitalism does not necessarily breed democracy. It works the other way around. Democracy often embraces capitalism, regulated capitalism. But what China is in no way a democratic state right now. It is a fascist totalitarian state.
This was a country that 98% people were addicted to opium just a few decades ago.
I'm sorry, Nisar, but that's simply not true. A, you're using, you know, god-awful stereotypes, 98% of the Chinese being addicted to opium. And frankly, I'll tell you, at the turn of the 19th century, there were a lot of Americans who were addicted to opium. Lydia Pinkham's tonic was used by most women in the United States, and it had opium in it. We were drinking cocaine in our Coca-Cola. These are not measures of whether a country is fascistic or is democratic. And the fact that there has been enormous industrial development and a lot of people have been lifted into something that resembles a middle class and certainly a very upper class, you're also seeing an explosion of poverty in China. You're seeing an explosion of deaths as a consequence of disease and pollution, at least at 400,000, almost a half a million a year, people just dying directly from the pollution. And that's probably a wild underestimate. You're seeing, you know, 20 million sex workers now. I mean, I am not saying that China was wonderful before it became fascistic, when it was merely communistic. What I'm saying is that if we think that by surrendering our middle class and destroying our manufacturing base in the United States and making our country less democratic by George Bush's decrees that he's the imperial president and he can tap your phone and mine anytime he wants, even without a court order. He can put you or me in prison anytime he wants on his own whim, simply declare us an enemy combatant and keep us forever, whether or not we're tried, and he can hold kangaroo courts. If you think that our supporting China and then becoming more like China is a good thing, I simply respectfully disagree. I'm sorry. I don't see it, but thank you for the call. I don't see this happening. I think that we need to be pointing out that this is a fascistic state, and that fascism and huge transnational corporations work very well, hand in glove. Thank you very much, and this is a great example of it. Stephen in Vancouver, Canada. Hey, Stephen.
Hey, Tom. How are you doing?
Good. What's up?
I'm originally from South Africa, and a lot of people are unaware of what I would almost call the neocolonialism happening right now with China going into Africa.
China's the third largest investor in the entire continent.
They are, and a lot of their investment comes with no strings attached, which is what a lot of corrupt African leaders find favorable. They have no qualms about human rights. They will sell you any kind of weapons, whether you're fighting a civil war or keeping, controlling the population. A large shipment was recently intercepted going to Mugabe's regime.
Mm-hmm.
And they realized that it's a lot easier to go into a country and bribe a corrupt leader and have that leader sign over all that country's resources than to go in and try to fight a war, like in Iraq, for example, which is a very costly exercise.
Right, and we've lost over 4,000 U.S. soldiers protecting Iraqi oil that is now being shipped to China.
Yes. And, I mean, Africa is really the last frontier in terms of natural resources.
Yes.
It has incredible resources of, you know, gold, diamonds, uranium, oil, coal, you name it.
Mm.
And while the Western powers are tied up in the Middle East, China's just strolling into Africa and securing all these resources.
Yes.
And
telling you, we saw this when we were in southern Sudan and in Kenya. This just a few months ago when we went to visit the Darfur region and see what was going on. I did my show live from the border with Darfur. In the middle of a refugee camp, as people were dying around us and 15 miles away, the Janjaweed were burning a village and murdering people. And it's the Chinese, as you just heard Salva Kiir, the president of Southern Sudan, say, it's the Chinese who were supplying the helicopter gunships and in many cases actually committing the atrocities against the people of Southern Sudan. And nobody is talking about this. It's like, oh,
they are in the process of doing that. And not only are they taking over in terms of, you know, providing loans and securing up natural resources, they're actually shipping over millions of Chinese people into Africa, where they will set up a mini town. And only Chinese is spoken, Chinese food is prepared.
Right.
They won't allow
this. This is just like the British did with the Indians, with India, you know, 100 years ago. Stephen, thank you very much for the call. Well said. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Visit us on the web at hartmanradio.com.
Indeed, we're taking our country back one congressional district at a time, one Senate seat at a time, one local district at a time, one dog catcher's office, step by step, right across the board. Today, Sam Rasool is with us. He's a small businessman, an entrepreneur, and community activist, and he is running for the 6th district in Virginia. His website, SamRasool.us, R-A-S-O-U-L. And Sam, I hope I'm pronouncing your name right.
Yeah, that's perfect, Tom.
Okay, great. Welcome to the show. And thank you for having the courage to stand up and run for political office. Tell us about the 6th district and what you intend to do running for Congress there.
Well, as the youngest congressional candidate in America, I've been pleased to be fighting this fight for over 19 months. We started back in the winter of last year, spreading a real progressive message, and we're finding that the working class people of the blue collar district have responded very well.
That's great. What and who's the incumbent right now? Who are you running against?
There's a guy named Bob Goodlatte. He's one of those individuals that pledged to only be in there 6 terms, but he's on his 9th. And unfortunately, the power and the greed gets to us all.
This is a Republican?
Yeah, sure.
And he's been there 18 years.
Uh-huh.
And you're trying to replace him. And your website, Sam Rasool, SamRasool.us. If people want to help a true progressive in a congressional district, this is the 6th district of Virginia. What by the way, where is the 6th district?
The 6th congressional district is really the western part of Virginia: Roanoke, Lynchburg, Harrisonburg. There's actually an easy way to get up to our website at sam2008.com. And what's real fascinating is we won the Democratic nomination here because people were ready for something different. And being, of course, the youngest congressional candidate in America, I also have a story that I think is really American. I'm the child of immigrants that came here in the 60s, a small business owner growing up in a working-class family, really something to be proud of when it comes to the American dream. And so we've been bringing this message now for 19 months, and we won the nomination. People have responded quite positively, you know, being Arab American, being a young guy, being a small business owner. They see that, you know, this is the time for that American dream to really come to fruition. And the way we've been able to do it is with good old-fashioned retail politics, just knocking on doors and pounding the pavement.
Sam, you said Sam2008.
.com
is the best website for you. Okay, great. Thank you very much for that. And Sam Rasool, what prompted you to get into to decide to run for Congress?
I hated politics. I hated politicians, let me say. I always loved politics because it's just a dirty, dirty business. And that really became really my driving force in running for office. I said, well, this is really where I'm most needed. And I wanted to run with a positive message about how we're going to improve America. And we've been able to stay positive, been able to really spread a progressive message because no one has challenged this incumbent in a decade. And when you look at this district, this is in Utah, folks. This is a winnable district. Our polling numbers look great. Things are moving along quite well. So it's time for the people of Virginia and the people for Western Virginia, in fact, to rise up and say, you know what, we need a new president and we need to make more positive strides in the Congress.
Are you getting some help from, you know, Jim Webb and from the Democratic infrastructure?
A little bit. To be honest with you, we're doing very well with the coordinated campaign here in Virginia. Some of these people are excited, and some of them are well entrenched and looking to their own interests. But
sure.
We've got a good old boys network here in Virginia, and we've been fighting against that as well. There's good and bad to every side, but with our
sure.
retail politics, we've really turned some heads. In fact,
so over the next
2 months, we're going to be knocking on 100,000 doors throughout the district.
Wow. Sam2008.com, the website. Sam Rasul, running for the 6th District in Virginia, our weekly Taking My Country Back, highlighting every week a progressive running for office that you can support. You can go to their website and toss them a few bucks and help. Let's help turn America blue one district at a time. Sam, what are the top issues in the 6th District, the top issues that you're running on?
By far and away, energy has come to the forefront. But energy is really part of the prevailing issue, which is economic fairness and government corruption. I think that these lobbyists and special interests have taken control of our country, control of our legislature. They take a voice away from middle-class America, and that's really what we need to be focusing on. If we come up with pure systemic reform, I'm running with this movement called Change Congress, and I stand with no less than 50 other congressional candidates right now all around America that believe in this type of systemic reform. I don't take money from PACs or lobbyists. I'm going to give rid of these earmarks. I'm going to have public financing of these federal elections so that way we can give a voice back to middle-class America. And the only way to come up with real energy reform is by putting these lobbyists and special interests in their place and saying, you know what, your money is not going to control us any longer.
That's absolutely great. Sam Rasul, Sam2008.com. Do you think that it's really possible that we can make that kind of change if we elect enough progressives? I do. I personally am very optimistic about it. But you're there on the ground. You're talking to politicians all the time. What do you think the chances are in the next congressional session of serious electoral change reform?
Well, we have to be realistic here, and we have to know that these changes are going to take some time. But we're talking about an America town 50 years from now. This is not going to be some a magic wand that's going to wave over the next session or the next couple of years. In fact, you know, to be forward with most people, I tell them that it would probably take us a decade if we start now to enact the type of systemic reforms that we need for the next generation.
Yeah, but we need to start now. And you never know. I mean, look at what Franklin Roosevelt did in 5 years.
You're exactly right. It can happen.
It can happen. Sam Rasul, Sam2008.com. Head on over there. Help him out. Sam, thanks so much for being with us. Good talking with you. Coming up next, Ronnie Deutsch is going to tell us what recession. That should be fascinating. Stick around.
This is Tom Hartman. Listening to Tom Hartman.
Well, the Labor Department reported that U.S. unemployment rates rose to the highest level in more than 4 years. Employment fell by 72,000 jobs. This is 6 months in a row. Unemployment rose by 285,000 people. Every single one of these, human beings, Americans by and large. The New York Sun reporting, you're in a recession when you have your gold fillings removed and not by your dentist. Your child's birthday party features the very reasonably priced Clarence the Once Convicted Clown. Your hostess gift is actually made by hostess. Your country club finds you steaming broccoli in the sauna. You give your son Spanish lessons in the summer by having him work in lawn care. When your doctor says you need a pacemaker, you start browsing Craigslist. When you get into your jacuzzi, you throw a load of laundry in with you. Your knobby tomatoes are the only heirlooms you have left. American Airlines charges you $5 per pant leg. Other airlines follow suit. And you take the penny out of your penny loafers. Well, there's a few more there. We can get to them. But right now, Ronnie Deutsch is with us. RONIDEUTCH.com, her website. Ronnie Deutsch, the tax expert and all-around good person here. Ronnie, welcome to the show.
Tom, good morning. Thanks for having me back.
I really enjoy talking with you, Ronnie. You are of the opinion that everything is just fine. I think either one of us is crazy.
All right, don't
convince me. It's me.
Tom, don't think that I'm Orphan Annie and the sun's coming out tomorrow, but I want to step back and say to you, you made some good points just now. If you and I were to speak with people in California, Florida, Arizona, Nevada, right, or we're speaking to the 463,000 people who've lost their jobs in the last 7 months, they're going to say to you, Tom, we have a recession on our hands. We know great people are struggling. I'm coming back and I'm saying to you as a numbers chick, the definition of a recession, Tom, we've had moderate growth. Flat growth. We know it's flat, but we've had moderate in the first two quarters. So if you and I broaden our definition of a recession and we say, but Ronnie, what about housing? What about credit? What about the jobs? What about oil and food? Of course you and I think it's Armageddon. But Tom, I just step back and say, I don't think it's a recession, and I do not believe it is Armageddon today.
Well, a recession technically is defined as two consecutive quarters of negative growth. And I agree with you, we don't have that. But what this means is, was arguably once meaningful when most people had jobs, back before Reagan came into office, when 25-30% of the workforce was unionized. You had 50-60%, maybe 70% of the workforce had the kind of job where, one person could raise a family, put their kids through school, pay off the mortgage in 20 years, own their home, have some equity, buy a new car every 4 years and actually pay for the thing. Now what we have, the 6 points here, I think, that you sent me, or was it 8 points about why we're not in a recession. We just talked about overall economic growth. This is a measurement of the health of corporate America, but not of average working people. You say consumers are still spending. Yeah, they're spending, but we had negative savings last year. I mean, negative savings means people are being wiped out. It means that not only are they not saving, but they're going deeper and deeper in debt. We have average credit card debt in the United States of around $7,000 per person right now, compared to under $100 per person the year that Ronald Reagan came into office. Things are going to hell in a handbasket, Ronnie.
Yeah, and I love the point you're making about the zero savings rate. Why is it, Tom, that we borrowed $350 billion from our ATMs with bedrooms and we didn't save a penny, Tom? It's because when we go back a couple of years, we had a spending party. And you and I know that the banks were responsible.
Actually, I'd say Alan Greenspan was responsible. He was the guy who drove interest rates down to the point where interest rates were actually below real inflation, not these phony numbers that they give us, but the real inflation when you include the cost of transportation and food.
Okay, but remember, Tom, between 2001 and 2003, we had 3 million jobs slashed, Tom. So we had to do something. I agree that dude maybe went too far. But remember, he lowered rates and started the spending party. That's the problem today, Tom. We had this incredible spending party, and now look at it. We got $4 gas, $20 a pound per steak. I think it's also a change, Tom, in economic geography. The United States is diminished in their power. We used to sneeze, people caught a cold, Tom. Now we sneeze, no one wipes our nose. We have a much larger problem, Tom, than just what you and I are talking about here in the United States.
Absolutely, and the reason why, is because we've moved our manufacturing floor to a fascist country, to China. And now we're looking at another fascist country, Vietnam. Countries that are absolute totalitarian governments where the average wage in Vietnam is around 30 cents an hour and the average wage in China is around $1 an hour. And this is all the consequence of this neoliberal trade policies. You know, the Milton Friedmans and Friedrich von Hayek's and Tom Friedman's and Ronald Reagan's and Bill Clinton's of the world saying, you know, 200 years of having a tariff-based trade system worked really fine, and it built the greatest industrial power in the world up until the 1980s. It worked fine for South Korea. It took them from in 1956 having an average income of less than $400 per person per year, and their major export was wigs made of human hair, in a 20-year period, adopting a highly protectionist trade policy, turning them into one of the greatest industrial powers in the world, just like Japan did between 1950 and 1990, well, and today, to this very day. But we're not going to do that. We're going to kick the doors open and make the world safe for multinational corporations and absolutely screw the American worker.
Hey, but remember, Tom, we know the biggest effect in our immediate future is always political. We know that Congress and the president do not like each other. We need Congress and the next president to be madly in love with each other. Hey, we sent $140 billion, Tom, in stimulus checks to try to stimulate the economy. It's not going to be enough. You and I need banks, Tom, to stop borrowing money to make their balance sheets look better. We need them to do what they do, Tom, loosen credit.
Ron Deutsch, are you endorsing Barack Obama with the Democratic Congress? I thought you were a Republican.
Let me tell you, Tom, what I'm endorsing. I am endorsing significant change, Tom, because we are going down the toilet. Yeah. I want a president to step in and manhandle Congress. I want somebody in there that's going to get policies changed, Tom, that makes us stand strong.
But
again.
Do we need, in my opinion, that would be Franklin Roosevelt. That would be, I'm serious. If you want to stimulate the economy, give people jobs, put them back to work. Even if they're make work jobs like building bridges and dams and all the federal projects from the 1930s that are still working today, build them, build the infrastructure of the United States, number one. Number two, increase the minimum wage. All the evidence shows that with the single exception of the time during the Arab oil crisis in the 1970s, you go all the way back to the 1950s to the first increase in the minimum wage. Every time the minimum wage goes up, 12 months later, economic activity has increased by at least 1 point, GDP. That you increase the minimum wage, you put more spending money in the pockets of people who spend the money, it stimulates the economy, it stimulates demand. Stop all this supply-side insanity, this trickle-down economics that just produces a nation of peons, and instead, let's start stimulating from the bottom up.
And Tom, but let's step back though. You're talking about, hey Ron, like the policies of the past, let's get people jobs, building whatever. Tom, I want to step back and say to you, I think we're past that. I think we have a much more significant problem. We have got to invest massive sums, Tom, to educate our workers and retrain them because as many
absolutely.
Said,
let's have free college for everybody in America. Let's do like every virtually every European Western European country does, like Japan does. If you can qualify for college, you can go all the way to a PhD for free. In Denmark, they even pay you $200 a month to go to college.
You see, Tom, you and I completely agree on our educational levels. You and I agree that it is not a one person at home and one person working situation anymore. So unless we educate today, Tom, unless, like you say, we give them the education.
Ronnie, you're becoming a socialist.
Tom, I'm a realist. I'm a numbers chick. You and I know unemployment is still only 5.7%, Tom, but here's the problem. The jobs that are available, if you and I open a paper anywhere in USA Today, the jobs are not going to be able to support the credit issues that people
no,
have.
No, I agree. We have about a half a minute left here. We're talking with Ronnie Deutsch, ronniedeutsch.com. And as Kevin Phillips points out, you know, these so-called unemployment numbers are bogus to begin with.
Again, Tom, I don't know if the numbers are bogus. What I do know is why are people spending money going to see Batman, Tom? Why are people spending money on things that I think, let's educate, let's pay off our debt, Tom. Let's make America stronger. That's what concerns me as a numbers check.
Yeah, okay. Broadly, I don't disagree. I think, though, that we need to look at this at an entire societal level rather than just blame the victims for going to see Batman.
We've got to talk again, Tom. Let me know when.
Okay. Great. Anytime, Ronnie. Ronnie Deutsch, RONIDEUTCH.com. Thanks, Ronnie.
Have a great day, dear buddy.
Thanks, you too. 16 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
me and you.
Truth in Broadcasting, it's the Tom Hartman program. Well, here's how they did it. Here's how they jiggered the numbers. First of all, the Clinton administration thinned out the monthly household economic sampling. This is from Kevin Phillips' article, Numbers Racket, in Harper's back in May. The Clinton administration cut by 1/6, from 60,000 to 50,000 people, the number of people who are sampled. How you doing? And in doing so, most of the families that they dropped were those in the inner cities. So the invisible become more, even more invisible, number one. Number two, they introduced an experimental new CPI calculation, Consumer Price Index, which shaved another 0.3% off the official CPI. And it gets even weirder. The 1983 manipulation, this was Reagan's, which substituted owner equivalent for home ownership costs, served to understate or reduce inflation during the recent housing boom by 3 to 4 percentage points. You ever heard of geometric weighting, hedonistic adjustment, and product substitution? These are the ways that they're changing the numbers. He says if you were to peel back all the changes that were made in the consumer price index going back to the Carter years, you'd see that the CPI would now be 3.5 to 4% higher, meaning that because of lost CPI increases, Social Security checks would be 70% greater than they currently are. This is who's really hurt by this, is people on Social Security. He says, based on the criteria in place a quarter century ago, if we just went back to when Reagan came into office, today's U.S. unemployment rate, based on the way that numbers were calculated back when before Reagan started messing with them, today's U.S. unemployment rate is somewhere between 9 and 12%. The inflation rate is between 7 and 10%. And economic growth since 2001 has been mediocre, despite a huge surge in the wealth and incomes of the super rich, and we are falling back into recession. Kevin Phillips, no slouch, and he really knows his stuff. We were talking about China in the last hour and how China is a fascistic dictatorship, not a communist country. In a communist country, everyone, and this is not, you know, the wonders and defense of communism, but in a communist country, by the way, did we just, Ronnie Deutsch, did we just convert a conservative to a liberal? I don't know. I'm astounded. Last time she was calling, well, anyway. As I was saying, in the last hour, we were pointing out that China is no longer a communist country. In a communist country, the state owns all the industries. The state is the employer of everybody. Everybody has health care. Everybody has a job. Everybody has a place to live. It might not be a decent job. It might be lousy health care. It might not be a great place to live. You don't have very many choices, and you basically have a dictatorial regime. I'm not an advocate of communism as, you know, played out in the Soviet Union or China or in Vietnam, but they're no longer communist. They've cut out the free health care for most people. They've cut out the housing for most people. The state subsidies are going away. They're becoming basically fascistic. It's a corporate state. And so, anyhow, interestingly, yesterday I just raised the question, or maybe it was the day before yesterday, Ellen Ratner and I were talking. We were wondering if our websites were being blocked by the Chinese, because the communist Chinese, the fascist communist Chinese, are blocking a lot of websites. And I got this email from somebody, I'm not going to name the guy because I don't want to put anybody in trouble who's over in China. But he is. He says, I'm sitting in my room in the Beijing Sport University and listening to you and Ellen Ratner wondering if you're available in China. So relax, you are available via web stream in Beijing. And then he goes on. He says, about the only websites I've seen blocked in the past 3 weeks are Amnesty International, and every time I try to Google Tiananmen Square until 2 days ago, which suddenly became available. So I sent him back a note, and my note said, thanks, and his name. That's all it said, just thanks. You know, I very rarely reply to emails just because of the overwhelming number that I get, but I did want to thank this guy. And so I just got back a failure notice. You know, a mailer daemon failure notice? It says, message rejected because of unacceptable content. I'm afraid I wasn't able to deliver your message to the following address. This is a permanent error. I've given up. Sorry, it didn't work out. And then the quote from the host, message rejected because of unacceptable content. So, my friend in China who sent me the note, if you are listening, thanks. And maybe you're not listening now. I don't know. Gus in Huntington Beach, California. We got a minute before the break at the bottom of the hour. What's up, Gus?
I always get in on the tail end.
Yeah, well, you know, a minute's actually a long time in radio. What's on your mind, Gus?
Okay. I think that saying that communist China is mature fascism is really weakens the term fascism and communism. I really believe that what you have here is corporate totalitarianism, you know?
Which I would define as fascism. But your point is well taken. The word fascism has been misused so much.
Interviewed Jonah Goldberg over liberal fascism, and
right.
You took him to task over the muddying of the words, because when you get into it, the right wing has massaged the word liberal to mean communist.
Yeah.
So, really, corporations have really been trying to subvert the United States ever since Teddy Roosevelt instituted the trust busting.
Yeah.
They tried to overthrow the government. Can you hold me over?
I can't, but, you know, your point is well made, Gus, and you said it very well. And you know, they tried to do a coup d'etat against Franklin Roosevelt as well. I would say it didn't start with Teddy Roosevelt. I would say it started with the rise of the railroads during the Civil War. And they're corrupting the United States Supreme Court in 1886 with the Santa Clara County decision, non-decision, shall we say. And it's been going on ever since. Thanks, Gus. 27 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Call him now at 866-303-2270.
Exposing the con in conservative. Tom Hartman here with you, 34 minutes past the hour. And time now for our Limbaugh alerts.
Condescending tribes making money selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
His guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this, they always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
I really am,
because I'm a Nazi.
That's right.
You're being scammed.
I'm a Nazi.
I don't care about the middle class, because I'm a fat conservative butthead with a face of a horse's ass.
He's a fat conservative.
So our Limbaugh alert for the day, Rush, offering these pearls of wisdom about Muqtada al-Sadr. Muqtada al-Sadr is reinventing himself and his Mahdi army from a military force to a force for essentially social good in Iraq. And there's actually something very wise about this, but Limbaugh is making fun of it because it is liberal.
So now we got Mookie and his boys. They're going to become community organizers. And, of course, that's what Obama did. And who better to advise Mookie than Obama? Seriously, that's what he's going to do. They're going to do with social services, education, social justice. I guess Mookie's thrown his hands in with the left over there. He's going to throw down the weapons and start disrupting the society, much like the civil rights organizations here in this country have tried to do to ours.
But here's the point. That's how you actually win. There's a reason why Hamas won in Gaza. There's a reason why Hezbollah has a strong presence in southern Lebanon. And it's not because they're terrorist organizations, although they are. It's because they also do social welfare work. They provide pensions for old people. They feed people. They build schools. They build hospitals. This is how even some of the most disgusting, terrible, god-awful, pernicious organizations and institutions around the world have won the hearts and minds of people, is by giving them what they need. And frankly, it should be the purpose of a government, is to give people what they need, to work with them, to be the employer of last resort, to be the insurer of last resort. But that, of course, would be socialism. And so here we have Rush Limbaugh ridiculing Muqtada al-Sadr. I'm telling you, if al-Sadr does this, if he lays down his arms and throws in with the government, he already controls the third of the seats in parliament, and turns his Mahdi army into a social force to help increase in the quality and rebuild the lives of people in Iraq, he is going to double or triple his political power. It's the smartest thing he could have done. Of course, no conservative could ever understand that, because even just the idea to people like Limbaugh is bizarre. I mean, they just don't get it.
In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob. I'm the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-at-the-mouth, jack-booted slob, the democratic trasher, years of liberal bashing with the equivalent compassion of a grommet. With the IQ of a pig, I'm the fat, obnoxious pig. And the truth of the matter is, I'm vomiting.
Oh, rush alert for the day. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Thomas in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, listening on WPTT. Hey, Thomas, what's up?
Yeah, that's right. I wanted to talk a little bit about what little I know about China. I read a book that was written after World War II. The guy's name was Eli Culbertson. He was talking about China. He said they had a dream. A Chinese national dream of similarity of structure was their goal, and they achieved it under communism. And the concern of the West was didn't want to interfere with China and didn't want to partition China, and they were worried about maybe they would become a fascist state. Now China is a super state and one step away from being a superpower, which is military bases offshore. Is that correct?
It depends on your definition. I'm not sure that there's one universally accepted definition of a superpower, but I'd say that if they're not one already, they're damn close.
Uh-huh. So they
have a nuclear arsenal. They have economic bases all over the world.
Somewhere. Right. They could call themselves the Middle Kingdom as well. And
yeah.
Do you think that in the future they want to contain their, just mind their own business and contain their, you know, maintain their superpower economic structure? But
I believe
you don't military go on the offensive.
Yeah, I believe that China is that there is a belief there, and I'm basing this on my experiences in China. I lived there for a month in the month of November in 1987. And I was working at the Beijing International Teaching Hospital and studying there, actually. I got a couple of non-conventional degrees in health, a degree in herbology and a PhD in homeopathic medicine, and from a university in the UK. And that got me into this training program in acupuncture. And I spent a month there studying acupuncture in Beijing. And, you know, talking with some of the folks there, and I certainly don't want to name any names or anything, because I wrote about this in my book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight. The consensus was that China has a unique and great destiny, that the Chinese are very, very proud. They're very nationalistic. They're very I Claudius, you know, as most nations are, frankly, as most cultures are. Yeah.
Right.
And that they viewed the 19th century as the European century, the 20th century as the American century, and the 21st century as the Chinese century.
Hmm.
And they believed, and this was in 86 that I was there, November of 86. And I wrote about it in Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight in 1992 or 93. And it's just come true. I mean, most of the predictions in that book, we had to update the book in 2002 because, you know, I was predicting, you know, peak oil and all these other things. I mean, it's all about peak oil. Is that they're reaching out all over the world to get resources, and they're securing those resources with both military and economic power. And they're doing it, and they don't care who they're dealing with. I mean, they're in Zimbabwe with Robert Mugabe, you know, who's murdered 2 million of his own people, and just brutally crushed, you know, the opposition in an election that he lost, and he's still in power. I mean, they're in Sudan, giving helicopter gunships and weapons to Bashir up in the north, who's, you know, and using these against the civilians in the South because there's oil fields down there, and Bashir has cut deals with them, and, you know, he gets half the oil money, even though it's coming out of the Southern Sudan. And so, yeah, it's a super state is what they're creating an empire. They want to do what the British did in the 18th and 19th centuries. You know, what the arguably the Dutch did in the 17th century. They want to do the Americans in the 20th century. They want to do in the 21st century, and they're very, very clear about that. I got to move along, Thomas. Okay. Thanks for the call and the comment. Well said, Dana in Saint Joseph, Missouri. Hey, Dana, what's up?
How you doing, Tom? I was just wondering, I read a lot of the blogs, well, you know, listen to a lot of progressives, and I haven't heard any boycott call for, you know, these Olympics. I know tomorrow I'm not going to sit in front of my tube and watch NBC. I don't care about this. I say progressives should be calling for a boycott.
Yeah.
And I haven't heard it.
I think it needs to go beyond a boycott. First of all, boycotts, particularly television boycotts, are generally ineffective, number one. Number two, although calling for it is a fine thing. I think that we need to go a huge step beyond that, though, and point out the things that are going on. Point out the fact that if somebody wants to protest in Beijing, there are three city parks where you can protest, but first, in order to protest, just like, you know, the Democratic and Republican conventions will have so-called free speech zones, protest areas, but unlike here, which I think is an abomination, but nonetheless, it's happening. Unlike here in China, if you want to show up in one of these free speech zones, you have to go to a local police department and you have to tell them in detail what you are going to say. And if they decide that what you are going to say is seditious, they arrest you on the spot and you find yourself in prison for the rest of your life or your liver being sold to somebody. I mean, that's how bad it is. We need to be pointing out this $18 billion alliance between American corporations, transnational corporations. They have no loyalty to America anymore. These transnational corporations and the Chinese government.
So if we don't get any ratings here in the States, though, how are they going to generate income? How are they going to generate revenue?
No, I agree with you. In a perfect world, if there were enough people who were well-educated about the issues and sufficiently indignant to organize a boycott or to do a boycott, it would be a great idea. I'm just astounded by how few Americans have any understanding of what's going on in China, or for that matter, care. That also astounds me. You know, just so long as they can get their cheap junk at Walmart, you know, it's like, who cares? You know, the people are dying for this stuff.
So if they're not going to boycott Walmart, then they're not going to boycott something like,
yeah,
you know,
my point. Okay. And the fact of the matter is, I mean, it's like, you know, boycotting the Olympics. Try boycotting Chinese goods for just 48 hours. It's a really tough one. Dana, thanks for the call. I mean, the idea is a great one and a noble one, and I salute it. But I think that what we can do with perhaps more potency is use this as an opportunity to highlight the human rights abuses in China. As I've said many times in this program, we never ended slavery in the United States. We simply exported it.
Watch live video of the Tom Hartman program at hartmanradio.com.
Watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line.
9.5 minutes before the hour on the Tom Hartman radio program. A lot coming up, by the way. On August 16th, a week from now, a week from this weekend, I'll be in Seattle along with Stephanie Miller, Rachel Maddow, Randy Rhodes, Mike Malloy, Sam Cedar. Ron Reagan is going to moderate this thing. It's the Looking Forward, Moving Forward, What Now Roundtable Forum from 6:30 to 7:30 at the Seattle Convention Center. Tickets are sold out. but Progressive Talk 1090 is doing an auction on their website, I believe. It's still going on for a few free tickets because everything else has been sold out. I will be at both conventions on Radio Row, both in Denver and in Denver. I'll be there putting something together here with our affiliate AM 760, Colorado's Progressive Talk, and at the Republican Convention in Minneapolis with our affiliate AM 950, KTNF, the voice of Minnesota. They're going to be hosting a party for change featuring Bill Press, Stephanie Miller, Jim Ward, Chris Lavoie, Ed Schultz, John Elliott, and yours truly, that's me, Tuesday, September 2nd at 5:30 at the Black Bear Crossing on the lake in the historic Como Lakeside Pavilion. That's on North Lexington Parkway in St. Paul. Tickets are $10 and available at the door only. There's more information, though, over at the website am950ktnf.com. Every week we get on an advertiser, one of our local progressive advertisers who's having a success story to encourage other people, to encourage, if you're listening and you own a small business or medium sized, any kind of business, and you're thinking, gee, this Progressive Talk Radio stuff, should I advertise with these folks? Will I make money advertising on Progressive Talk Radio? We want to share some success stories with you, so we invite these folks on. They have a minute to talk about themselves, to give a pitch for themselves and their products, and a minute to talk about their experience advertising in Progressive Talk Radio. And with us right now is Ray Yingling, who is the proprietor of Vitasource. VitasourceMadison.com is the website. And, Ray, welcome to the show.
Hi. Thanks, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Tell us, first of all, about Vitasource.
Well, basically, Vitasource is just your local, yokel, mom-and-pop vitamin shop. But we do any sort of natural products as far as vitamins, minerals, but we also do sports nutrition. And I work a lot with people on what's called drug-induced nutrient depletion, basically how drugs suck vitamins out of our body.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's something that's pretty unknown these days.
Hmm.
And it's a little bit different. So I try to give each individual, kind of a personal consultation, if you will.
That's great. I also noticed from your website at VitasourceMadison.com that you've got one of the Arctic Pure Ultimate Potency Omega-3 Fish Oil, one of the very best omega-3 sources out there. This is like the pharmaceutical-grade stuff.
Exactly. And it's molecularly distilled, so that way you don't have to worry about mercury or PCBs or any of that other nonsense.
Yeah. Can I buy off your website?
Actually, no, you can't buy off my website. Really, if you just give me a call, you can order it right over the phone. That's perfect.
Okay, and the phone number's on the website. And, of course, for people who are in Madison, you are where?
I'm on Monroe Street. I'm just 2 blocks south of Edgewood at the entrance of Wingrove Park in Knickerbocker Place.
Great. For all the folks listening on our Madison affiliate, and tell us how you've been advertising there in Madison on the mic, 92.1. How's it working for you?
It's doing real well, actually. I've been advertising now for maybe about, close to a year, I guess you could say. And it's done real well. Business is great, and the Madison has been great. The neighborhood's been great. I can't complain at all. So.
Wonderful. So you're making money on the investment of your advertising.
Yep, absolutely.
Good on you. Ray Yingling, he is the owner of Vitasource. You can find him on the web at VitasourceMadison.com. And, of course, if you live in Madison, you're on, did you say Madison Street?
Monroe Street.
Monroe Street. Thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm mixing up my presidents.
Yep.
Ray, thanks a lot for dropping by.
Sure. No problem at all. Thank you much, Tom.
And thank you for advertising on 92.1 The Mic there in Madison. 866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Marion in Scappoose, Oregon, on listening on KPOJ. Hey, Marion, what's up?
Hello, Tom. I'm a 71-year-old listener and registered Democrat in Scappoose.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went on and got my mail, and then my mail was from the Heritage Foundation, a tax increase impact survey for the Scappoose, Oregon area.
Oh, no.
And I thought I'd read one of the questions. Number one, were you aware that thanks to a provision in tax law demanded by liberals in Congress, President Bush's historic tax relief packages of 2001-03 are set to expire, resulting in what Wall Street Journal describes as the biggest tax increase in the nation's history? Answer yes, no, we're not sure. And on down.
This is called a push-pull, Marion.
So anyway, there you are.
Yeah, okay. Thank you very much for sharing that. I'm telling you, this all started with the Heritage Foundation. I mean, they were one of the very first ones, Joe Coors and I think Richard Mellon Scaife, but in particular Joe Coors, funded this thing, and it has become the model for all the others, and it still is one of the largest, and they have all these fellowships, and they support everybody from right-wing talk show hosts, get a little money on the side or whatever, to speakers and speakers bureaus, and they used to be willing to supply us with right-wing guests to debate, but they've been a little more reluctant to do that recently. Unfortunately, Stefan in Phoenix, Stefan, am I pronouncing it right, in Phoenix?
Yes, sick. Hi, Tom. Actually, I called in. I wanted to say that I think that we're at what is the tail end of the consumer trap. I think we're trapped politically. Last week, just about everybody across the board noted that the drop in oil prices was due to a reduction in demand. Yet I didn't hear either of the presidential candidates really jump on that and say, this is it, reduce demand, reduce consumption, and we can control the price of oil. Instead, they are mired and stuck in this trap. Just like the mortgage industry was this huge bubble of consumer spending, so is the oil industry. It's something we can't actually get ourselves out of unless somebody is willing to lead and admit that things have to get a little bit tougher before they're going to get better, just like your economist that you have on often wrote in his book, things are going to have to get bad, but they'll get better.
Yeah, Ravi Batra. Yeah, it's an interesting one, Steph, and thanks for the call. And I wonder if the reduction in demand, I mean, we know Americans are driving less. There's been about a 3% drop over the last couple of years. But I'm wondering if this short-term reduction in demand is simply because China is shutting everything down to try and clean up the air. And so maybe they're using less oil, and that's causing the spot price to drop. I don't know, just a guess. The Republican voting scheme up next.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. This is Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. Back about 13, 14, 15 years ago, I never did get an exact date on this clip, but it's more than a decade old. Paul Weyrich, the Republican strategist, the guy who was a major advisor to Republican campaigns, starting with Ronald Reagan, or largely with Ronald Reagan, Bush Sr., Bush Jr., one of the fathers of direct mail, Republican direct mail. Paul Weyrich was speaking to a group of committed Republican Christian activists in a church, and he had the following to say.
Now, many of our Christians have what I call the goo-goo syndrome, good government. They want everybody to vote. I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
Our leverage, the Republicans, because they represent a minority perspective in America, certainly. Hey, let's help the top 1% get richer and richer and screw everybody else. Their leverage goes up as the voting populace goes down. So how are they driving down the voting populace? Well, with scaremongers like Lou Dobbs and whatnot. They're getting everybody all hysterical about the fact that Ann Coulter is not registered. She's registered to vote at her real estate agent's home instead of her own, for example. You know, what they call voting fraud. Or, hey, maybe one of those folks from Mexico is actually going to register to vote. And so they're trying to pass these ID laws. We had the Supreme Court decision recently. I think it regarded the Indiana case where they said you must have photo ID. In Missouri, they still don't have yet the photo ID. And Phil Lindsay, the chairman of Show Me the Vote in Missouri, has had a recent fascinating experience. I read about it in a post over at democraticunderground.com, and this is pretty startling. Phil, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here, Tom. Happy to be here.
Yeah, thank you. First of all, kudos to you. Good on you. Let me salute you for the work that you're doing here and for highlighting this. In Missouri, in fact, I have here in front of me, the acceptable ID is to vote. You can vote with a driver's license. You can vote with a passport. You can vote with a Missouri Institute of Higher Education or out-of-state driver's license, or with the little yellow card that the local election authority sends to you to prove that you're a registered voter, plus either a bank statement or utility bill, none of which have pictures on them. Do I have that right?
Exactly.
Okay, so you can show up and you can vote without photo ID as long as you've got the yellow card from the election authority and either a bank statement or utility bill. You and your son tried to do this. What happened?
We walked in, I should probably preface by saying I had been asked in February when we voted in the primary for a driver's license, and I had words with the man at the time. Time being what it was, I went ahead and showed it to him, and I said, don't do this again. This is against the law. Check it. I called Charlene Davis, who's the Republican head of the Eastern Jackson County Election Board, 2 weeks before our election in August, and asked her. I said, have you got this straightened out? Are these people aware of what is acceptable and what is not? She said, I assure you that, there will be no problem. I went in anyway with the freshly printed sheet that the Secretary of State provides showing the acceptable IDs, and I was carrying such with me. My son and I walked in. I was
This was just a few weeks ago to vote in the Missouri primary, right?
Right. Okay. And they said, do you want to vote? I said, yes. They said, we need to see some ID. I first handed them a card that had been sent to me by the Election Commission. They said, we need something with a signature on it. I said, I don't think so, but here's my bank statement. That works. That's got my address on it. He said, we need something with a signature. Okay, let's try this. And then I handed them another non-photo acceptable ID. And they said, if you don't show us something with a signature on it, you better get out of here now. If you want to vote, show us something with a signature. Most people are carrying things with signatures that would be only, like the driver's license. Because of the attempt to intimidate voters, I said, this is what is legal. I do not have to show you a photograph or a signature. And you can see my signature as soon as I sign the poll book. And then you can compare it to the past times that I've voted. Gentleman stood up. He said, there's the door. You either find another precinct to vote at or you show us something with the signature. And I said, I'm sorry. Maybe you aren't aware of this, but this is the law that I'm holding in my left hand. Will you please look at it? He would not. I said, if you would, then would you call Charlene Davis? I was promised this would not happen. He would not do that. I asked him to call the Secretary of State's office. He rose up from his chair and he pointed to the door. He said, if you don't get out of that door or provide us with a signed, acceptable ID, then we're going to make sure that you leave. I looked at him incredulously and I said, what are you going to do? Call the police to throw me out of, the polling place? And, apparently that was what he had intended, because about 30 seconds later, two officers came to the door and escorted me out of there. Later, four officers showed up. To the officers' credit, I will say this, that once out, they said, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just not vote? You're breaking their rules. I asked them, I said, which takes precedent, their rules or the law? And here it is in my hand. Will you please look at it? The policeman would not look at it. At about that time, my son, who had called the local election board, had them on the line. The people inside, the election judges, were on the line, and my son actually heard them say, oh, okay, so we don't have to have a signature then. And I heard about this later on. The election board asked to speak to the policeman. My son handed them the phone. The policeman refused, and they said, we're going to give you a choice. You either leave, or we're going to cuff you and take you to jail. So I, had to do some quick thinking. What is the proper thing to do here? And I decided that I was not going to be disenfranchised by six little tin gods in there. And so I said, if you're not going to let me vote or tell me why you're not going to let me vote, then you can take me to jail. At which time they cuffed me in the back of the police car and drove me to jail, and I was booked for creating a disturbance.
So you got arrested for trying to vote with legal ID. It just didn't happen to have a picture on it or a signature on it, but it was totally legal, and they refused to talk to the and this is, there's Charlene Davis, this Republican appointee, Eastern Jackson County, Missouri Election Board. You then went and talked to the election officials, right?
Yes, Yes, they had asked my son to tell me that when I got out of jail, please come over and talk to them at the election board.
And they wouldn't let you go back to your precinct and vote either, because they said that those guys were going to, like, beat you up or something.
They said that if I went back, that I would very probably be arrested again. My understanding is that I'm never to go back to that precinct to vote.
So we are now seeing, I think, you know, writ large, the Republican strategy for 2008, which is make it harder and harder and harder for people to vote.
Precisely. I think that maybe the shortest way to assume what is at least happening in Missouri is that if you cannot pass a photo voter ID to disenfranchise people, then insist upon it anyway at the polls, and it becomes a de facto situation.
Right, and I'm guessing this is going to be happening all over the country. We're talking with Phil Lindsay, the chairman of Show Me the Vote. He was arrested for trying to vote with legal ID. It just didn't have to have a picture. In Missouri, you don't have to have a picture. You can have your card, your voter registration card, and a bank statement or utility bill showing residency. And that's enough, and that's what he had. And they grabbed him, cuffed him, threw him in the back of the police car, took him down, booked him, and you're facing actually criminal charges right now.
Absolutely. Right. $300 bond. I don't know whether this is one of those ironies of life, but my court date is 9/11.
And
8:30 in the morning.
Amazing. And Phil, if you're convicted, will you then be a convicted felon and not able to vote in Missouri?
convicted
of trying to vote?
Fortunately, this is a misdemeanor. It was a municipal charge, so that won't be a problem. But if I am convicted, it will be because they said that I had created this nuisance and disturbance and frightened the people by failure to show proper ID at the polls.
Yeah, even though you did show legal ID. This is absolutely incredible. Phil Lindsay,
right.
You know, good on you for what you're doing. Show Me the Vote in Missouri, and when you guys have your website together, let me know, and we'll broadcast it on the air.
I will do that. Should be about 72, 96 hours.
Okay. In a couple of days, they're going to have a website up. So, and you can read the whole story over at Democratic Underground. Phil Lindsay, thanks a lot, Phil.
Thank you, Tom.
Keep up the great work. 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Tom Hartman Radio Program, your radio support group for We the People. Downright crazy stuff going on over in the McCain campaign, actually. DHL has merged with Airborne Express. This is a German company. And McCain over in Wilmington, Ohio, talking about this. One of the residents asked him if he would help stop this proposal to quit using the airport as a hub. It's basically going to cost 8,000 jobs. And McCain is like, this is a terrible thing. You know, it's just, I don't know what we can do, but we got to do something.
My name is Mary. I'm a founder of a small nonprofit hospice in Wilmington, Ohio. And in 2000, I saw you on the Straight Talk Express at the Wilmington Airport. And I wonder if our world would have been different had the train stopped in a different place.
Anyhow, she goes through this whole thing. She says, you know, can you help us out? Are you going to save this thing? And McCain says, oh, this is a terrible blow. If there's an antitrust implications associated with this, I'd certainly seek a thorough investigation. I got to look you in the eye and give you some straight talk. I don't know if I can stop it or not. Why not stop it? Well, it turns out that Mr. Davis, that would be Mr. Davis of John McCain's campaign 5 years ago. 5 years ago, McCain's campaign manager lobbied heavily for the deal. The Associated Press reports that Davis lobbied the Senate to accept the proposal by DHL to buy Airborne Express for $1 billion. Davis's lobbying firm reaped the benefits. Filings in the Senate show Davis's lobbying firm, Davis Manafort, was hired to help both companies deal with Congress, who were objections over DHL's foreign ownership arose, and Davis and their partner earned their firm $185,000 for the deal. Airborne Express work that year, records show.
This is a terrible blow. If there's an antitrust implications associated with this, I certainly would seek a thorough investigation and look at that. I also want to assure you that job retraining and education programs, as I mentioned earlier, are vital. We are in a period.
The jobs are gone, so what you need to do is you need to learn how to flip burgers. That's what you need to do. By the way, Ted Stevens, the disgraced Republican from Arkansas, tried to insert language into a bill that would prevent foreign-controlled companies like DHL from holding military contracts. McCain took steps to thwart that. He stopped that. George Voinovich of Ohio called the situation, or the Republican from Ohio, one of the worst job catastrophes that any community in this nation is facing. Is McCain going to come clean about the fact that he and his campaign manager helped shuttle through the DHL deal? I don't know. We'll see. Or maybe John McCain is. Or maybe Mr. Davis is. Or maybe anybody who'd vote for this guy is. Yeah, probably. 25 minutes past the hour, 866-303-2270, our telephone number. Alan in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Alan.
Yeah, Tom, how you doing?
Just great. What's up?
Wanted to weigh in on that guy who called from Missouri.
Yeah.
And his thing. When those laws were written for the election, we had paper driver's licenses with no photograph on them. So these laws go back a long time, and nobody's ever updated them.
Yeah, you know, I don't recall ever having had to show ID to vote when I lived in Georgia.
They used to send us a card from the League of Women Voters right before the election, you know, and then a reminder card to go vote.
Right.
You take that. You carry your voter ID card.
Yeah, I've got my voter registration card, just a little paper thing. You know, I used to carry it in my wallet.
Right.
You know, along with credit cards and things.
You show this stuff, and, you know, most of the poll workers know who you are anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
And you vote.
Yeah.
I think he's got a good civil case to sue against the state for this.
Well, I do, too, but the larger concern is, and you read his more lengthy post over Democratic Underground, this guy came around the table and chest-bumped him, you know, and, I mean, just, you know, intimidated him. The cops came, they took the side, and, you know, the bottom line is that there are going to be massive efforts to stop people from voting in those areas
right,
that are largely
enough,
Democratic.
If we get enough suits going, that'll reach the papers.
Right. This needs to be out there. It needs to be public. It needs to be known right now that the Republican effort to stop people from voting that knocked 80,000 people off the rolls in Florida in the 2000 election, that knocked tens, if not hundreds of thousands of people off the rolls or kept them from voting or caused them to have to cast placebo ballots in Ohio in 2004 and in other states in 2004. These are, you know, setting aside the possibility, the probability, frankly, in my mind, of electronic machine fraud. This is probably one of the major things that's driving the fact that in many states you see a huge difference between the exit polls and the actual vote count. Because, you know, people, the exit polls, people think they voted. They're given a provisional ballot because they're saying, no, you don't have the right ID or whatever.
Right,
so here, you get this.
That.
That's right. You get this placebo ballot and it never gets counted. Alan, thanks a lot for the call. Apparently in Missouri right now, the program is already being well rehearsed. And I guarantee you, it ain't just Missouri. It's all over the United States. What are we going to do about this? Well, I think we have to publicize it first and foremost. You got any other suggestions? Let us know.
This is Tom Hartman. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
I have a small avalanche of emails saying Ted Stevens is from Alaska, not Arkansas. I knew that. If I said Arkansas, I'm sorry. It's been a long week. I have been on this book deadline. We're writing the sequel to Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, and you know, working 16, 17, 18 hours a day, 7 days a week for months now, and I think it's starting to get to me. 866-303-2270, Anthony in Seattle. Hey, Anthony, what's up?
Oh, yes, Tom. I was just absolutely just enraged when I heard this gentleman had been arrested. And so it prompted me. I'm up here in Seattle, and I called the Missouri Secretary of State's office.
Mm-hmm.
And I spoke to a gentleman there who told me that it is not the Secretary of State's responsibility to educate poll workers. It is the local election authority's responsibility.
Right, and the local election authority in this case was a GOP appointee.
What I did was
Charlene.
I left a great big long voicemail. They have a person on their website. Her name is Betsy Byers. She is the elections outreach and education coordinator. And I left a big long voicemail for her that she needs to get on the stick, and she needs to have posters made up of all the acceptable forms of identification.
Oh, they actually had them there when he went to vote. They actually had on the table, they had the one sheet that's on the Secretary of State's page that show. In fact, I have a copy of it right here that shows in color, you know, the whole thing, what's acceptable, you know, and it says that what's acceptable is the yellow card from the local election authority plus either a bank statement or a utility bill. It says it right there. It was there. They physically had it. He had it in his hand. They had it. This is East Jackson County, Missouri. The election board, the GOP appointee, Charlene Davis, is the one in charge. And, you know, apparently in this precinct, doesn't matter what the law is. And apparently for the police department, it doesn't matter what the law is. If you look like maybe you're voting Democratic, you're not voting.
Well, bottom line is, I'm up here in Seattle, and I'm calling the Missouri Secretary of State, you know, giving
Good
them
on you.
A bunch of crap. You know, I think that people in there in Missouri need to be, like, going and, I mean, causing disruptions in the Secretary of State's office. I mean, that's what we do up here in Seattle. I mean, they need to get on the stick down there.
Yeah, I agree. And they need to be hearing from our listeners all over the country. Thank you, Anthony, for what you did and for listening to the station and in Seattle there. And I think in the vast majority of Missouri, the only option that people have, by the way, for radio is right-wing talk radio. Cassandra in Hollywood, California. Hey, Cassandra.
Okay, Tom. You are always telling us to get involved. This is the opportunity. Every state is short on poll workers.
We should
be poll workers.
You're right. You're absolutely right.
Your mantra should be go, you know, contact your state. I actually went, I'm in California, I've worked 5 polls. Mm. You know, sometimes it's a pain in the butt a little bit. I can give some suggestions on how to make it a little easier. But I went to the Missouri site, and it said that some employers will even pay you as if it's jury duty. So you can get the day off as a jury duty kind of day.
Yep.
I suggest if you have a friend that can do it with you, that you get, you know, so you can have a friend there with you during the day. If you can only do half a day, oftentimes they'll let you split that day with someone. I've worked in places where I always bring like a comfy camp chair because I'm going to be sitting. I bring my laptop in case it's slow. I mean, you know, I'm not going to disenfranchise anyone. And there have been times we had the double bubble trouble here in California during one of our primary election. But we can do this. We can do this.
Right. So become a poll worker. That's great. Cassandra, good on you. Congratulations. Okay. And thank you for the call and the reminder. That's absolutely the solution, or part of the solution, a part of the solution. Jivan in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Jivan.
Hey, how you doing, Tom?
Good. What's up?
Yeah, we're on the south side of Chicago over here. We're starting to get these, they look like junk mail letters from voters registration or things like this, I guess. I'm not sure what they are, but I know there's several people who's gotten them, and at the local borders, we were sitting down and, you're looking at them and they look like junk mail, but they say you have to send this in or whatever, and the girl was like,
The girl was like, well, I know I registered and all this sort of stuff, and I haven't moved or anything, but I was about to throw this away with the junk mail, and I was kind of wondering what it was. And I was like, you know what? You better send that in right away. And matter of fact, make a copy of it and start telling people about it, because if I think these are things that if they don't send them in, then they challenge your vote or something like that.
Yeah, that's called caging. If you don't send it back, then the Republicans get the list, and they do it based on zip codes and neighborhoods, so that they're looking for neighborhoods that are more working class, more inclined to be Democratic, or more African American minorities and whatnot. Those areas where they think it's going to, or historically, I mean, they can just look at voting patterns, neighborhoods that have been historically Democratic voting patterns, and they send out and actually some states are officially doing this now. I mean, the Republicans have institutionalized caging. Used to be that the Republicans would do it. They got a court order against them almost 20 years ago for this, which is still in effect, by the way. And then they would have their challengers stand at the poll with a list of names, and you know, if your name came up, they would personally challenge you. But now the states are doing it, and they're sending these things out, and if the card doesn't come back, then they assume you don't live in there anymore, you're not right, and they take you off the voter rolls. So when you show up, you get a placebo vote.
Well, please, people in Chicago, you know, do that.
Yeah, check it out. Ed Jivan, thank you very much for the call. This is I'm telling you, this Paul Weyrich is this his whole thing. You know, he doesn't want people to vote. He doesn't, you know, because as he said, it's not about getting more people out, it's about getting fewer people out.
I don't want everybody to vote. Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
There you go. Number one strategy for the Republican Party for 2008, 2006, 2004, 2002, 2000, 1998, all the way back to 1980. David in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hey, David, what's up?
Yeah, hey, Tom. I'm going to change it up here a little bit. I don't know. Our governor in Minnesota here, Tim Pawlenty, who's on the short list of vice president candidates, is now touting a new Republican brand, and he's claiming that the Republicans want to go after the Sam's Club, you know, families and the Sam's Club. So he's just trying to remarket this. And my question is, why aren't they going after the Walmart families? And my guess would be that they, you know, with the reports that came out with the anti-union campaign going on at Walmart, that it, you know, they wouldn't have much support.
Yeah, and Walmart is kind of the brand that everybody loves to hate, you know.
Yeah. And also another thing here is, you know, to mock Governor Pawlenty, a local radio host here, Mark Haney, he's, you know, our governor touted a tire gauge, and what Mark Haney support, what he said is we should protest here in Minnesota. We should send the governor gusset plates to represent the Farrell Bridge.
Yeah, and they should rename the bridge the Governor Pawlenty Bridge.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. There
All
you
right.
go.
Thanks, Tom.
Thanks, David, for calling. And you know, yeah, absolutely. Jim in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Jim.
Hi. How you doing, Tom?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's on your mind?
Is there a system in place that notifies the voter when their vote has been challenged?
No.
Why not?
Yeah, to the best of my knowledge, there's not. Although the part of the problem is that there are no federal standards outside of, you know, the inability to discriminate, legally discriminate, because the Constitution wanted to leave the way voting was handled up to the individual states. This was part of many of the founders and framers' concern of a federal government getting too strong or too intrusive or too corrupt, and they didn't want to see something like a Politburo emerging, which could control elections. What they also were concerned about, James Madison, read Federalist Number 10, about political parties doing the same thing, and that's what's happened, is that the Republican Party has become the party of corruption and the party of you're not going to let your vote, and that's where it's going. It's a disaster. Jim, thanks for the call. Elizabeth in West Hollywood, California. Hey, Elizabeth. Elizabeth?
Yes.
You're on the air.
Good morning. I was wondering why the ACLU couldn't file a class action lawsuit against, maybe they probably couldn't do it federally, but they could do it individual state, and not only name the Republican Party, but name individuals like, what is his name, Paul Weyrich?
Paul Weyrich, yeah, or actually in this case, maybe Charlene Davis in the Missouri Election Board in eastern Jackson County,
and
the GOP appointee.
And ask for huge punitive damages.
You know, I think the ACLU pretty much limits themselves to First Amendment rights rather than voting rights. But the League of Women Voters, I mean, there are some other ACORN, there are some groups out there that focus very much on voting rights, and it might be a good one. I mean, I think we should all be out getting involved in this. Elizabeth, thank you very much. Justin Woodland Hills, just a quick comment here before the break.
I think we should keep it simple with this type of thing. Basically, if you're being discriminated against like the voter was from the DU, just take it to your local official and bring witnesses with you and bring all the documentation and just simply lay out your case in front of them. And then if that doesn't go, go to the feds and then go to the state control, Secretary of State's office and make it known and then take it to the press.
Yeah, and here's one more thing.
Nationwide.
That's right. And let me just add to that, Justin, in this YouTube day and age, bring along a video camera. Thank you, Justin. I'm sorry, we've got to move along here, but 45 minutes past the hour, or a phone that'll record video. I mean, that would have been dynamite if we had video of that guy getting arrested.
Visit HartmanRadio.com for live streaming video of the Tom Hartman Program.
The oil business.
Nowhere could you get that happy feeling like when you're drilling that Arctic well. There are no people like oil people. They smile when it does blow. Withholding technology, they won't fall. OPEC stranglehold on the oil. They only care that they're
helping you in the water cooler wars. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ellen Ratner on the line with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Hey, Ellen.
Well, quite a bit going on. The unemployment statistics came out. I'm sure you've probably been getting them. Unemployment claims, first-time claims, 455,000. And that's on the weekly. And don't forget, there's a lot of summer employment, so it's been adjusted for the summer. Nancy Pelosi just issued a statement saying that they have tried to work in a bipartisan way to get the unemployment benefits for another 3.5 million workers, provide 130 million American households with recovery rebates, increase minimum wage. She said they are going to come up with a package that they hope a second stimulus package that would start to create some jobs and also provide some disaster assistance.
You know why this is meaningless?
Because they ain't going to get it through.
Well, not only that, yes, there's that, but this is also why they ain't going to get it through. Americans all over this country who are not particularly engaged in politics, because which is the vast majority of Americans, they're not paying attention. They don't pay attention until October, November, until just before the 5-6 weeks before the election. They all know that the Republicans want Congress to go back from vacation, that Nancy Pelosi, gabbled them into vacation, that the Republicans want them to go back and vote to drill for oil to lower gas prices, right? They all know that because the Republicans are doing political theater with this. The Democrats have had so many topics that they could do brilliant political theater with. The S-CHIP program, the Republicans' opposition to it, I mean, first of all, they should rename it as something that doesn't sound like what you need to avoid as you walk through a pasture. But, there's so many opportunities for political theater here. Nancy Pelosi could be doing just on the drilling, for example. Just imagine.
What's interesting on the drilling, let me just I want to support your point here with something that happened today.
Sure.
Now, I mean, they are doing political theater on the floor of the House. Well, Boehner issues a statement today saying that Nancy Pelosi, they want her to return from her book tour and bring the House into session and deal with the supply of American energy. Boehner was seen on the Ohio golf course. Then he says in his statement, well, he's going to come back tomorrow and return to the Capitol and rejoin the floor protest. Yeah, well, he was on the golf course.
Yeah, but the point is that the Republicans are doing political theater. What the Democrats should do is they should get an elected official in every single state where there is a gas lease or an oil lease that is that has been granted. We've got 10,000 oil leases where they're not drilling, where they know there's oil, and the oil companies are sitting on these. They've got them on their books as assets. You should get a Democrat in every single one of the 50 states, from Alaska to Florida, to stand on top of an empty field or wherever it is where there is an oil lease owned by one of the oil companies, holding up the logo of the oil company and saying, drill here, drill now. You already have the lease. And if you had 50 elected Democrats or 100 or 1,000 elected Democrats doing that all on one day all over the country, that would be the ultimate political theater. It would completely shut down Newt Gingrich's program. It would completely shut down the John McCain thing. It would expose the whole thing for the fraud it is. But the Democrats don't know how to do political theater. They're not thinking in these terms, and it's going to cost them another election.
I don't disagree with you. And one of the other things the Republicans said on the floor today, they were talking about the Paris Hilton energy plan. They said, let's bring up the Paris Hilton energy plan. I mean, they know how to take.
Exactly. Yeah. I think we just lost you, Ellen. Yep. There we go. We just lost Ellen. But, you know, yes, Paris Hilton comes out and says, when Paris Hilton starts sounding more coherent than the Republican candidate and does better theater than the Democratic candidate, then you know that you've got a political problem. And the fact of the matter is that Paris Hilton came out and said, yeah, let's drill and do the tax incentives. Let's make it all happen all at once. And it was kind of silly because you can't drill all at once. It's going to take 10 years. But nonetheless, Paris Hilton did a great soundbite. Ellen, you're back.
And I want to say that, you know, they don't care whether they're telling the truth or not. They just do it.
I know. It's all about the theater. And the wonderful thing is, if the Democrats were to finally figure out after all these years, I mean, Tip O'Neill knew how to do this stuff. Lyndon Johnson knew how to do this stuff. The Bobby Kennedy knew how to do this stuff. Jack Kennedy knew how to do this stuff. The problem is that the Democrats who knew how to do political theater are dead and gone, and they've been replaced by the DLC and a bunch of wonks. And Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi may be very, very competent legislators. You know, God bless them. They know how to write a bill and they know how to get it through, but they don't know how to do political theater, and that's what wins elections.
I have actually been sitting down talking to some of the people, and our voices never heard. I said, you know what? You're going to be at the Democratic convention. Why don't you sit down with a bunch of talk show hosts and find out from them what their advice is? Since we talk to the people every day, they don't care.
Yeah, it's absolutely tragic. I mean, this is the Bob Shrum 101, how to lose an election. It makes me friggin' crazy. And so anyhow, I'll stop at that point. We have 1 minute left, Ellen. I'm sure there's other things happening in the world.
The other interesting item is that the president actually, as much as I object to him going to China, as much as I think that he's making a mistake, he did, as you know, on the gaggle this morning, Dana Perino said that the president has dispatched the ambassador to try and get Joey Cheek's visa, reinstated.
Mm-hmm.
And China's foreign ministry just sent out a very difficult and tough statement saying that no one should interfere with China's internal affairs. Well, the Olympics is not exactly internal affairs.
Yeah, and beyond that, Joey Cheeks is not calling for a boycott or anything else. He's one of these guys who thinks, you know, why can't we all just live together, and isn't it wonderful, the Olympics? And, I mean, he's not even a radical on Darfur, with Team Darfur. Anyhow, Ellen Radner, TalkRadioNews.com. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
Coming up tomorrow, Bernie Sanders and Ron Suskind. It's going to be a great day, and, of course, anything goes Friday. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you, activism begins with you. Volunteer to be a poll worker. Find out what's going on with the elections in your community. Tag You're It. See you tomorrow.
This is the Tom Hartman Program. For exclusive audio archives and more information, visit HartmanRadio.com.